This is the Saxo Market Call, daily insights on what is moving the financial markets.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It is Monday, 30th of August, 2021. And we're getting underway this week after, of course, the Friday speech from Fed Chair Powell, in which he pretty thoroughly laid out the case that he believes and the Fed believes that inflation will prove transitory. We'll get into that in a moment, but to my mind, as a brief preview of what I think on it, I think this is almost the Fed's equivalent of peace in our time, or Irving Fisher's stocks have reached a permanently high plateau, or maybe more recently and more apt, Yellen's idea that tapering Fed the Fed's asset purchase would be like watching paint dry. That certainly didn't seem to be the case in late 2018, when the Fed had to do an about face in 2019. Don't forget, before the pandemic even started, we had the Fed increasing organically, as it turned out. They called it the balance sheet and cutting rates. So, of course, Peter, we saw a positive reaction around the shop. We saw the dollar weaker. We saw risk appetite jumping higher. And I put up the S&P chart, and we've talked a lot about this interesting monthly pattern we're seeing. So I guess traders should be waiting for around mid-month, and then maybe we'll see another one of these dips. I have a hard time thinking that this is going to be the permanent feature of the landscape, but very, very, I don't know, very dodgy to me price action last few months. And I wonder if these this derivatives market is what's in control here.
Yeah, but you're absolutely right. The very dovish comments from Powell at the Jackson Hole event caused a rally into the weekend close. And you had the NASDAQ 100 and the S&P 500 closing at an all-time high on the Friday. We're extending the gains this Monday morning. We didn't have any big hiccups in Asia, China, to say the least, which has been, you know, gathering and mustering all the attention lately. The Huawang Asset Management posted a very big loss because of a write-down to their businesses. It's effectively being a control bailout by the Chinese government, but it's not really causing any extra energy into the Chinese market for now. If we look at the Friday's price action, you can see the crypto and the blockchain market was very much in a good mood. But if you look outside that very niche segment of the market, the payments and the semiconductors were really rallying hard, especially the semiconductors. It's up, that part of the market is up 20% now year to date. And I had a small conversation with a good old friend that works at a Danish chip manufacturer. I wanted to know a little bit how much it extends these constraints outside the car industry. And it seems to be that, you know, the constraints in the semiconductor is really extending to other parts of the overall sector of semiconductors. The lead times are going up, prices are accelerating. It's a very troublesome environment. And I think that it's a good lead-in, John, to the discussion that you're sort of getting at here in the headline on slide three, right? I mean, how much of this is transitory inflation?
That was the you know, he's laying out a compelling case, Fed Chair Powell, in that Federal Reserve speech, in his speech on Friday. And the key chart pool I put on here on slide three from his presentation, just pointing out that the demand side stimulus in the wake of the pandemic had the ironic effect of, unlike any other recession we've seen, suddenly everybody has more money than they ever thought and dreamt possible, especially at the lower end of the income scale, more likely to spend that money. And it's a pandemic. They're in a lockdown. Where do they spend it? They spend it online. They spend it on stuff. So we have goods and especially durable goods, he points out on this chart, just going crazy, way beyond trend. And services have yet to catch up back to where they were pre-pandemic because we're still in a semi-lockdown status in some cases, et cetera. So the grand assumption here is that you see a mean reversion. Maybe that's going to happen to a degree. It likely will happen in terms of the mix to a degree. But there's some challenges on the durable side here on everything. They have the green transformation. And you have a geopolitical situation, which is very different, where people are looking to maybe diversify their supply chains, which has led to a completely new environment in terms of input prices potentially going forward. And you mentioned, and the big question is, how quickly could this happen, even if it is going to happen? And there's signs of massive shortages, not only in semiconductors, but that chart you showed me, we'll maybe dig it out for tomorrow. The car inventories was just insane. It's going to take a long time to bring these back to par.
We're basically getting close to zero. I mean, it's a wonderful chat by Christoph Borod. He's an economist working for one of the big banks. And
a great follow on Twitter.
Yeah, he's a great follow on Twitter. He always have a great perspective and charts, by the way. It's a chart going back to 1967. It's just staggering to see what's happening. And I think it really is a story that we're seeing all these constraints and shocks on the supply side. And you have a Biden administration that continues to just hammer on that fiscal button. And I mean, you have the infrastructure bill. He wants to do infrastructure. The U.S. needs to do a lot of infrastructure. But how can you do that with the green transformation and the scarcity of commodities? And you have all the big miners saying they want higher prices to really elevate their investments. And quickly, John, staying with this slide, I pulled in the headline from the chief economist from IMF saying that, you know, the emerging markets cannot afford another taper tantrum of 2013, when Ben Bernanke back in May sort of floated an idea that, you know, they would do the tapering of the QE, and then the market puked in a month's time before it settled. And it basically was a warning shot for what was going to happen later for the emerging markets when the dollar tightened a lot, financial conditions. And I wonder how much of that is part of the Fed's equation here. But it because I think the emerging markets is a bigger boomerang effect back to the U.S. than it has been, you know, 10, 20, 30 years ago, right, with the economy become much more global.
Yeah, certainly any dollar strength is toxic very quickly, and the U.S. yields rising is would be toxic as well. And we've talked about last week, have a look back at some of our podcasts last week talking about this risk that we're going to see a quite different yield market, or treasury market, I should say, as we go into the last couple of months of this year. We get past all this one-off treasury account wind down effect, the general account that they wound down from $1.5+ trillion to $300 billion in short order in just a few months this year. And then they need to pick up issuance once the debt ceiling debate, we assume, of course, is settled in the coming month or two. So, yeah, surging yields could be one thing. And then at the same time, the Fed's supposed to be tapering when this effect is happening as well. So it's going to be very interesting, this transition in the treasury market. And emerging markets could be caught in the mix there if that leads to, of course, to dollar strength or higher yields. For now, the immediate reaction in FX was, of course, we saw risk on, we saw dollar weaker, we saw rate expectations coming off, let's say for early 2023, coming off 200 basis points. All great stuff for a dollar bears, et cetera. So I bring in Aussie dollars, one of the last sort of dollar charts that, you know, it's still not rolled over yet. One of the reasons being that the Australian dollar has been so weak. So you see the technicals there. Yes, for something like euro dollar, we closed back towards 118. It has reversed that last little down wave, but you know, it's just not there yet in terms of the upside, unless we get some follow through towards 119. But Aussie dollar, it still hasn't reversed fully. So we got into the 73 plus area, but you can see that's still just the 61.8% retracement. And if we just erase that Friday bar there, suddenly we're back in bearish territory here. Of course, there's negative news coming out of Australia with their latest COVID numbers, et cetera. So just watching to see, and I also like to focus on Aussie because of the commodity proxy and theme there, and then a little bit of China exposure as well, to see if there's any knock-on effects. I mean, we weren't really expecting much from this Fed Chair Powell speech. Anyway, he cleared away certainly any uncertainty of Fed hawkishness and was as dovish as possible. But is this really something new? Does this really change the lay of the land? That is going to be the key test early this week. Also for something like gold traders, where we saw a decent pop in the gold price, but there's a massive overhead resistance level around 1835 there. Now, something else that's afoot that's affecting input prices potentially is what almost inevitably proves a one-off, and that's the Hurricane Ida striking Louisiana. The concerning thing here, besides, of course, the loss of life and the terrible risk for folks in its path, this is an even more powerful hurricane, and it's on the same course as the most expensive hurricane to ever hit the U.S., Katrina, back in 2005, $180 billion nearly in damages. I've seen expectations around $40 billion. I don't know how they can be that precise, but the key, I guess, will be whether the new infrastructure that was built up to reduce the risk of the type of damage that was done in Katrina, levees and so on, that those all hold. And of course, that has to be our hope. There was a decent pop in oil and gasoline prices overnight, a lot of that erased. So it looks like the market may be sort of ready for this, but let's see, of course, where the damage is on the other side of this.
You can argue, I mean, of course, the risk of lives for people living in the New Orleans area, of course, is it's horrible from a production side on gasoline and refined products. It's actually a positive that it's not you know, going through Houston, the Houston area, because that's where most of the refineries are, as I know, right?
The biggest cluster is there, yes, but there's something like 13% total of U.S. refining capacity in the path, and there was a massive disruption in gasoline last time around. One of the biggest plants was totally offline for a while back in 2005. Plus, they've shut in 1.75 million barrels of production. You know, that's out in the Gulf, that's onshore. You know, dealing with the disruptions of that, but it's probably just for a few days on that kind of thing, unless there's, of course, damage to a refinery too. So
I think for oil prices, all have been mentioned, it is still the Delta. It's still the Delta variant, yes, on the pandemic that is the key concern for the oil and gas demand, because it's, you know, I don't think we fully yet know the full impact. I mean, certain countries are hit harder than others. I mean, the US, you have pockets where the local area is hit pretty hard. I think there were some very great charts out over the weekend showing how diverse the impact is from the Delta.
Asia especially is really getting hit very hard right now.
Yes.
And you see something like domestic gasoline consumption in the U.S. fully normalized, back to normal, but international travel is still, and so for some routes, you know, index 5 out of 100, right? So it's very diverse what's going on.
Exactly. And here in Denmark, we just announced over the weekend that in 2 weeks' time, the COVID-19 will not be considered a risk to society. So a lot of the restrictions will be stripped completely in Denmark. And then you have, as you said, in the Asia, you have a completely different situation. But as we talked about, Asia in many ways in the early parts of the pandemic was so lucky that you had the original version of COVID-19 that was not as contagious as it is right now. So they quickly got it under control. And then all the more contagious variants popped up in India, Europe, Brazil, US. And now that's coming back to bite Asia. So there are a lot of the countries, New Zealand, Australia, China, that is pursuing this zero case strategy, going to be very interesting whether that's actually possible, or they will have to adapt, maybe live with it to some extent as we have done in Europe and the US.
Yeah, but it just extends the timeline. That's the really difficult bit. Exactly. That keeps the uncertainty hanging over for potentially another full winter.
And Asia is the world's supply side, yes, of the balance sheet, right? On the production side of things. So if we get a lot of disruptions, it could aggravate the inflation pressures.
Both the production and shipping. So yeah.
Yes.
To get the stuff to market.
Earnings. Slide 6. We are in a very quiet part of the earnings season. We have a lot of off-calendar companies, as I call them. They're not following the calendar year reporting. I've highlighted in red the ones that are most interesting to watch. So today it's Meituan and Zoom Video Communications, just called Zoom, maybe, for most people. And then on Tuesday, CrowdStrike, that's tomorrow, CrowdStrike and NetEase. So NetEase being one of the biggest gaming companies in China, I think very key to watch if you have exposure to China and with the ongoing regulation. CrowdStrike is obviously a cybersecurity company, which have done, if you remember from the first slide we had, is doing quite well this year, cybersecurity. And then on Thursday, Broadcom with, I think, potentially some interesting perspective on the semiconductor industry. And I should say, the debate is heating up because you have Broadcom on the one side actually supporting the NVIDIA acquisition of Arm Holdings, which holds most of the most interesting IP, I would say, in a lot of this industry. And then on the other side, you now have Elon Musk being more vocal. You have Microsoft, you have Google, you have other players basically saying they see it as a negative for the industry if NVIDIA is allowed to buy Arm. So it's going to be an interesting debate because NVIDIA will file the acquisition formally with the EU within the next months, as I understand it.
All right. And we have a very busy economic calendar this week. And I think there's a couple of interesting things to watch for. So besides, you know, today, we're getting a German CPI data point. Watch for anything that's higher than expected there. There's a lot of nervousness in Germany around inflation for historical reasons. And but I'd pull out a couple of things here. And that is, first of all, the consumer confidence data point tomorrow out of the U.S. Does this concern confirm the massive drop we saw in the Michigan sentiment number for both the original and the final Michigan sentiment survey, suggesting the Delta variant is having an impact? And then finally, on Friday, besides payrolls, which, you know, employment indicators tend to be lagging quite badly, it's still worth watching those, of course, as always, also for the market reaction. Earnings as well. We need to watch if there's any wage price spiral engaging at some point. But it's the August ISM services survey after the initial this private market with an I markets survey showed a very big drop in the services activity in the U.S. could also be potentially linked to Delta outbreak, etc. So those are the two that I'm actually more curious about than the actual payrolls themselves, even though these tend to get more market reaction. And then finally, that September 26th German election, we had a debate over the weekend, and we saw the Scholz of the SPD given sort of credit for winning the debate there, and some of the polls showing the SPD is actually overtaking the CDU-CSU bloc. Very interesting indicator as we're heading into that German election. So we'll be updating you later this week with our macro strategist, Christopher Denbeek from France. And I think that for today, we'll call it a wrap. We'll see if this move we saw off the back of Fed Chair Powell's speech on Friday holds into tomorrow. And we'll be back with our next Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter at Saxo Market Call or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.